produced at the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon. This is Free Culture Radio. Free Culture Radio is an examination of drugs, drug cultures, and the ineluctable and indispensable influence of drugs on society. Free Culture Radio neither promotes the use of any drugs nor condemns people for being involved in drugs. To the extent that drug use presents problems for individuals or society, those problems are made worse and more intractable when people who use drugs are treated as others and ignored, stigmatized, and even brutalized. The decriminalization of drug use is about much more than just treating drug use as a health issue. Decriminalization of drug use is an essential step toward treating people who use drugs as people. That's why the passage of Oregon Ballot Measure 110, the Drug Addiction Treatment and Recovery Act, was such a huge victory for harm reduction and public health. Oregon is leading the way in the U.S. by following in the footsteps of other nations. Policies that recognize the essential humanity of people who use drugs are actually in place around the world. The Eurasian Harm Reduction Association and the Correlation European Harm Reduction Network recently began a series of online harm reduction sessions. These online sessions are in place of its fifth harm reduction conference, which, due to COVID, is not taking place this year. One of the sessions was entitled, Different Approaches for Decriminalization, What Works? On this edition of Free Culture Radio, we hear from two of the speakers on that panel. Dr. Pavel Bem, a former mayor of Prague and a member of the Global Commission on Drug Policy, and Mechtel Busch, director of Mainline, a harm reduction organization located in the Netherlands. The next voice you hear will be that of the moderator of the panel, Jamie Bridge. He's the chief operating officer of the International Drug Policy Consortium. He introduces Dr. Bem.
And decriminalization is one of our main priority areas for the next 3 years, and one in which there's already been so much progress and momentum in different countries. And alongside the Talking Drugs platform, we've produced an online map that we've called Drug Decriminalization Across the World. And that shows that there's around 30 countries that we found that have adopted some form of decriminalization related to drug use. So this is growing in its size as an approach. And as an approach, it's now got explicit support from the entire UN system, from major donors such as the Global Fund, and it's also clearly permitted within the international drug control treaties. Our first speaker today is Pavel Bem, the former mayor of the city of Prague in the Czech Republic and a member of the National Drug Commission there. Pavel is also a member of the Global Commission on Drug Policy, and we're really honoured to have him here today to kick us off and to start this discussion. So with no further delay, Pavel, over to you. Thank you very much.
I have the privilege to introduce this session on decriminalization on behalf of the Global Commission on Drug Policy, self-constituted body of currently comprises actually 14 former heads of states, presidents, prime ministers, altogether 26 leaders and influential personalities. We started the advocacy on international drug control policy reform 2010, prioritizing individual and public health, addressing HIV, hepatitis, TB, drug mortality, all caused or fed by drug prohibition and so-called war on drugs. Later, we advanced in opening an informed and science-based dialogue on decriminalization and illicit drug regulation, breaking the taboo around two major unintended consequences or unintended negative consequences of punitive international drug control regimes. And this is human rights violation and stigma caused by decriminalization of people who do just a simple thing as possessing and using illicit drug with no harm to others. And the fact that the prohibition is feeding the most violent and profitable black market in the world, the one with illicit psychoactive substances. In order to dismantle that, we have to put governments into control through the legal regulation. Certainly, there are many other unintended consequences. I don't want to spend much more time on that. I need to mention over-incarceration, epidemics of HIV, hepatitis, TB, drug overdoses, but also the lack of access to pain relief medication and treatment. The punitive policies do not target or impact all parts of the society in the same way. It's the poorest and most vulnerable citizens who are apprehended and punished. This itself constitutes a breach in the rule of law, equality and justice, and even the very fabric of society. There is no time for me to comment on the state of art of harm reduction today, but the situation is for me deeply concerning. As the situation stands today, the major sustainable development goals that concerns health and hence connected gender equality, the protection of the environment, socioeconomic development, and the reduction of violence, corruption, all this will not be achieved for an important part of the population because simply of current drug policies. The spirit of criminalization and punition still is well settled at the core of drug control, and the last decade was not enough to remove this entrenched reality. We have found no evidence on the efficacy of criminalization in reducing the demand, the supply, or the so-called unintended consequences of prohibition. Rather, if the drug control regime wants to reduce the unintended consequences, it would need totally to change its strategies. The criminalization of drugs questions directly the right to privacy. For instance, Supreme Court currently in Colombia and Argentina, as well as the regulatory framework of cannabis in Washington, D.C., were clear on the right of people to use drugs in their homes. Criminalization, discrimination, and stigma, as we know, can result in disastrous consequences for someone doing as simple an act as to use an illegal substance. Risk, for example, of incarceration, lifelong criminal record, loss of income and livelihood, loss of marriage, child custody, poor care in the health sector, exposure to physical and psychological violence, loss of reputation, among other disastrous consequences. In contrast, well-implemented decriminalization, as we witness in countries as diverse, for example, as Portugal, Jamaica, protects human rights and addresses the drug-related harms much more efficiently. Actually, Czechia, my country, has decriminalized in the past 30 years twice. And we are happy to have one of the lowest rates of HIV infection among people who inject drugs. Certainly also one of the lowest rates of overdoses among people who use drugs. Hepatitis infection, one of the smallest heroin markets in Europe. Moreover, vulnerable populations are in contact with health and social services. So it is also crucially important. So finally, what are the recommendations? The Global Commission applauds the positive outcomes from the decriminalization policies in place, but lament that there are few examples so far. We need a new understanding of decriminalization in order to fully roll back the damage of punitive drug laws and uphold the principles of human dignity and rule of law. There must be no sanctions whatsoever for drug possession and for personal use. Many countries have passed decriminalization legislation or something like decriminalization legislation, but it has not been implemented in many countries effectively so far. Inefficient policies range from low threshold levels, corrupt institutions, or simple a lack of political will to end decriminalization of people who use illicit substances. There are many other low and non-violent actors and the drug trade beyond the one of those using for personal function. For these actors on the market, for which criminalization is both unnecessary and, according to our opinion, disproportionate. Individuals engage in the drug market for a number of reasons, from economic marginalization and a lack of other opportunities to coercion. Yet criminal justice systems rarely take these factors into consideration when prosecuting low-level actors who face severe punishment, from lengthy custodial sentences, but also to the death penalty in some countries. All countries have the opportunity, following the adoption of the UNGAS 2016 outcome document, to show that drug policy is as high on their agenda as they have stated, by opening the debate with the different stakeholders to strengthen the response, and by avoiding their national drug policies become irrelevant and counterproductive by focusing solely on law enforcement approaches. These dialogues are a first step for all government institutions to join the debate and plan a clear path towards leaving the prohibitionist paradigm behind, and to decriminalize, and also to explore regulatory models for all illicit drugs. Thank you very much for your attention.
That was Pavel Bem. He's a former mayor of Prague in the Czech Republic, and he's a member of the Global Commission on Drug Policy. He was speaking on a panel organized by the Eurasian Harm Reduction Association and Correlation European Harm Reduction Network as part of their online harm reduction sessions. The panel was entitled Different Approaches for Decriminalization, What Works? We'll have more in a moment. This is Free Culture Radio. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. For those of you keeping count, this is show number 51. Back in 2016, on the very first installment of Free Culture Radio, one of my guests was the comedian, journalist, and activist Ngaio Bilom. I spoke with Ngaio recently. Were there any interesting races down in your state? What was happening down there in Cali?
The interesting races were all in the propositions, where it turns out we're not the liberal hippie bastion that people think we are. We rejected rent control. We allowed Uber and Lyft and the rideshare services to basically write their own law, classifying these gig workers as somewhere less than employees, but more than contract freelancers. It's the weirdest thing. And there's a provision in that law that says that in order to make any changes to it, you need a 7/8 majority from the legislature, which was the biggest sticking point for me. I mean, I understand, as a person who's been a freelancer pretty much my whole life, I understand the gray areas and the weirdness about it. But if someone works 40, 50 hours a week for you, you should make sure that they get overtime and health insurance and all these things. And I feel like this is just giving these rideshare companies an excuse to go out and try to buy more laws. And I don't think we need corporations buying laws. They spent $200 million and now they're going to probably make $8 billion off of that. And that's an excellent return on investment, but it's also bad news for regular people and people who need good jobs that pay a livable wage.
You know, one of the worst things about the way we talk about unemployment in this country is that you're counted as employed if you have earned any amount of money at all during a period. So even if you work for 1 hour, hey, you're employed. Congratulations.
Congratulations. I'm still not eating, and I don't live in a house or an apartment or a tent, but I did work. I do have a job. Yeah, it's the weirdest thing how they do that. And there are a couple other propositions that are escaping me right now that did not pass that should have passed. If we look at some of these results, the people who've been winning, AOC, right? What's her name? Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Rashida Tlaib, Ilhan, they have very progressive positions and they're winning. And it turns out that these Democrats who were way more conservative, who don't want to push for progress, actual progress, and not just progress, those are the guys who are losing their seats. And so it just proves you can't be out here trying to court the racist vote. You can't be out here trying to court the moderate vote. Those guys, they already have someone to vote for. They already have Republicans to vote for. You have to motivate the other people. We actually have them outnumbered if we go out and do the things we're supposed to do. We're supposed to have public health care. We're supposed to have better schools. Flint is supposed to have clean water. These are all the things that we're supposed to be doing. These are the things that we're supposed to be fighting for. And if people aren't fighting for that, then why is someone going to support them? Right? Just because the other guy is worse? Well, we know the other guy is worse. And I understand that elections, I'm a lapsed idealist. And so I'm trying not to go full cynic. I understand that elections are definitely often hard choices and hard compromises. People are always like, even if you vote for less evil, you're still voting for evil. Me as an adult, I understand that evil is always going to be with us. There will always be a percentage of evil people. And so less evil is preferable. You vote for less evil, and then next time you vote for even less evil. And then you try to get even less evil than that. And then you want less evil. Listen, we all thought weed was going to be legalized in 92 when Clinton was elected. Right? And it took until 2016 or 2014 for that actually to happen. And it was step by step, inch by freaking inch. People were fighting tooth and nail and clawing and going hard and failing and getting back up and failing and getting back up. And that's how you do it. I read an analogy the other day. It was like this: the person on the right is like, meet me in the middle. And then so you take a step toward the middle and they take a step back. Right. So they've just shifted the middle again. And so you can't compromise with these right wingers in the same way that you would compromise with other people, with, say, your wife or your partner or your husband or whatever, because they don't compromise like that. They start way extreme. And so for you to compromise, you have to move way extreme. Right. So you got to start way further on the other end, just as a talking point, just to get the conversation started. You got to be like, we're burning all this down and we're taxing everybody who makes more than $500,000 a year. We're feeding all the kids and we're doing this and we're doing that, right? And then they're gonna all yell and get all upset and whatever. You're like, well, hey, come compromise with us, right? The compromise doesn't start at, well, we're just gonna abuse all the poor people first. Oh, okay. That's not how it goes. You have to start. I am not a flaming radical by any stretch of the imagination. I am generally an extreme moderate. Like, I feel fervently that we can find a balance in just about all things. But for there to be balance, the sides have to come at it from equal terms. And so if you're already starting from an imbalance, you're not going to find any balance at all. Right? So shout out to all the radicals. Shout out to all the cats going hard for the left and trying to force these steps, because we just, you know, you're going to compromise yourself into being a right-wing hate group if you keep it up like that.
That was Ngaio Bilom. You can find him on Twitter and Instagram, where he's NGAIO420, Ngaio420. Welcome back. I'm Doug McVeigh, and you're listening to Free Culture Radio. Let's hear more now from that panel, organized by the Eurasian Harm Reduction Association and Correlation European Harm Reduction Network as part of their online harm reduction sessions. Again, that panel was entitled Different Approaches for Decriminalization, What Works? Let's hear now from Mechtel Busch. She's director of Mainline, a harm reduction organization located in the Netherlands.
I think most of the audience views the Netherlands as a progressive country with a drug policy in place that's in favor of public health, and that's luckily very true. But I also want to touch on some recent developments here in the Netherlands, also to let everyone think along with how fragile the steps are that we're taking in drug policy and how easy it is to forget why we implemented certain policies in the first place. I think my presentation in the end will leave you quite confused. So hopefully others can take that up and clear the path for us. So just very briefly, I only have a very short time, but our drug policy in the Netherlands stems from the 1970s. And the aim is really specifically to control and to reduce the drug-related societal issues. Health issues, but also public safety concerns. And there's a few keywords in our drug policy, which are pragmatic, humane, realistic, and evidence-based. That sounds really good to my opinion. There's four pillars in our drug policy when it concerns public health. So I'm not talking about the justice side of things here, of course, but where it concerns public health, we have four pillars. They are still in our drug policy today, and those consist of providing people with good information, making sure that you work on prevention for young people in particular, making sure that you have evidence-based drug treatments in place, and working on harm reduction. And that's the latter thing is something that Mainline, our organization, does. The key messaging in the drug policy is very clearly that possession, trafficking, and production of drugs are illegal in the Netherlands. That's maybe contrary to what some people, mostly people outside of Europe, would think. But definitely, possession also is illegal in the Netherlands. Now, the interesting thing is that the use of drugs is not illegal. So there's no penalties, no fines when you use drugs, personal consumption. Two other elements in the law are a separation between soft drugs and hard drugs. So soft drugs, for example, cannabis. Everyone knows, of course, the coffee shops in the Netherlands. And then hard drugs, more the substances that have a larger impact on your health. So heroin, cocaine, methamphetamines, that bunch. And coffee shops, like I mentioned, they are tolerated in the Netherlands, so they're not per se legal, but they have sort of an in-between status, but they're tolerated from the perspective of public health. That raises question, there's no time for that. So how to distinguish between personal use, or I am allowed as a person to use drugs, but I'm not allowed to possess drugs, so how should I deal with this? Because if I want to use, I have to have it in my possession. So there's categories in the law for different substances that sort of distinguish how much you can have on you, where the police would still think, okay, in every reasonable thinking, this would be for personal use. So for soft drugs, for example, hash or weed, that is below 5 grams. For hard drugs, it's below 1 gram. Oh, sorry, half a gram. For ecstasy, something that is quite common in the Netherlands, a maximum 1 pill. And for GHB, I don't know if other people use that in other countries, but we do here, and that's below 5 milliliters is still seen as possession for personal use. So if you have this on you, the police may confiscate your drugs, but they won't fine you, and it won't result in a criminal record. Now, that is, of course, something that is fantastic, because all these young people that might be experimenting and that get a criminal record just because they've used drugs a few times in their lives and got caught by the police, it's of course a huge waste of young lives. So this is something that I think is very, very important indeed. And if you have larger quantities in your possession, then they will be confiscated and you might risk a penalty, of course. So then you'll see, and that will be seen as possession with intent to sell or drug dealing. Now, to confuse you a bit more, the Netherlands has some quite topical debates around drugs at the moment. So we have the honor of being one of the main producers of ecstasy and cannabis in the world. Crystal meth is now also in our portfolio. We're getting pretty good at that as well. We are an extremely important hub for the cocaine trade and the heroin trade through our harbors in Rotterdam, for example, and moving that into Europe. And also, we have a lot of big players in the dark web scene, where of course a lot of drugs are also sold. So the Dutch have a bit of a problem with drugs on the production side of things, the trade sides, and of course, that leads to very, very big societal debates, and our drug policy is actually under pressure. A recent report, for example, and it was released by a pretty high-end think tank, it's a really good report on the drug-related crime, and it's very nuanced, but when it comes to harm reduction, they literally take a causal line saying that because of the Dutch focus on harm reduction, we lost sight of organized crime. So I think it's extremely worrying that high-end people make such simplified conclusions and disregard, for example, the schizophrenic situation with our coffee shop system, which I think, because we never fully regulated, led to a lot of problems. But this is now, impacting harm reduction. So I think that's a big concern. I think also the debate on regulation has really faded to the background, of course, also due to Corona. But before, it was a debate because of all the production issues in the Netherlands. And just to show, this is my final slide, just to show some of the confusion, and I think also people listening in might be slightly confused with our drug policies. But our own minister is also getting quite confused. So one of these fine gentlemen that you see here is our Minister of Justice. The audience may guess which one of them. He says that the use of soft drugs may lead civilians to not abide by the corona rules that are instated in recent months. Quite a big claim. I don't know about you guys, but if I'm stoned, I'm usually sitting at home. So it's actually quite good for our quarantine. No, just kidding. But it's a pretty big statement, and it has consequences as well. So recently, a motion was accepted in Dutch Parliament to actually allow law enforcement to fine and penalize people who use soft drugs at night, so after 11 at night until 7 in the morning. And this motion, there is a majority in Parliament for this. And this is exactly something that is in that gray area of where do we make the distinction between personal use and possession, and how can we make sure that we safeguard the things that are in our law and make sure that they're not forgotten just by topical debates that are not going into the detail of why our law is as it is. I think the final quote that is really worrisome from our Minister of Justice is the latter one. I can't read because my Zoom is in it. But it basically says the possession of soft drugs is technically illegal anyway. So therefore also is use. And this is a claim, this is a quote from our Minister of Justice, just flagging how confusing the law is, but also how confused our own minister is with how to implement these laws and how to protect users.
That was Mathilde Busch, director of Mainline, a harm reduction organization located in the Netherlands. She was speaking on a panel entitled Different Approaches for Decriminalization, What Works?, which was organized by the Eurasian Harm Reduction Association and Coalition European Harm Reduction Network as part of their online harm reduction sessions. And that's it. Thank you for joining us. You have been listening to Free Culture Radio. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. Thank you to everyone out there who's fighting for civil rights, human rights, and social justice. A big thank you to our engineer. And of course, thanks especially to you, dear listener, for your support. You make it all worth it. Theme music for Free Culture Radio was composed and performed by Tom Nickel and Four Dimensional Nightmare. We'll be back in a month to continue our examination of drugs, drug cultures, and the influence of drugs on society. Thanks again for listening. This is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long!